The Latina Writers Collective in Kansas City is known for nurturing its members who are developing their work. There are lots of success stories. Poet Shaneth Carraza has a 2012 book out called Conjuro, and board member Miguel M. Morales was chosen to attend a writing workshop in Los Angeles as a Lambda Literary Foundation Fellow, where he got lots of assurance about his direction from the writer Dorothy Allison.
When you have an experience in your life, it's okay to go back to it because it's a well that you bring knowledge out of. I always kind of felt weird about writing about being a farm worker so many times, and she said, no, that's just a well of creativity because it changed the trajectory of your life. So you can keep hitting that well and it'll reveal new lessons to you all the time.
Stay with us for a conversation with Miguel Morales, Shaneth Carraza, Jose Faust, and President Gabriela Lemons, all part of the Latino Writers Collective and this edition of New Letters on the Air, a production of the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam. Jose Faust is a native of Bogota, Colombia, but has been a resident of Kansas City for years, where he's known as an artist of many famous murals. He's also one of the founding members of the Latino Writers Collective that began in the mid-2000s at the Writers' Place. The collective has published two books, Primera Página, Poetry from the Latino Heartland, and Cuentos del Centro, Stories from the Latino Heartland. Here's Jose Faust with more.
We started the collective, really, it came out of a group that was in Kansas City called Las Poetas, which Angela Antequera, at that time Angela Cervantes, used to run, which was a group of women poets. And I always used to kid Angela, well, where do the men go, you know? And after Las Poetas broke up, there was just kind of this little vacuum. We started meeting at the Writer's Place and kind of came together. And over time, we started bringing in people, and that became Latino Writers Collective.
Can you remember what made you decide, oh, we've got the Writer's Place, we can do it there?
For many years, I've gone to the Writer's Place. I remember going the first week it opened. I actually just out of curiosity reading a thing in the paper. I thought, well, I'm going to see what it's like. But then also over years, just going to a lot of readings there, going to other readings around town, and honestly not hearing our Latino voices. But, you know, not to blame the Writer's Place, but it's the sense that a lot of Latinos just weren't involved or getting involved. And I knew from hearing Las Poetas that there were others. The Writer's Place was ideal because it was centrally located. And then Angela at that time was a treasurer, so she was on the board of the Writer's Place. And one of our first members, after we had come together as a group, was Gloria Vando. She came on kind of as our muse in a way, and she offered us an office right there at the Writer's Place. So we said, okay, that makes us legit. So
we
embraced
fantastic.
It. Yeah, and we still have our office there on the third floor. We have a library that's been donated to us that we are expanding, and we've got a lot of books in it. So, yeah, we have our own office in place there.
Jose, are you also on the board? Are you the president right
now?
Yeah,
I'm the president right now of the Writer's Place. And I'm no longer the president of the Latino Writers Collective. It's now Gabriela who's taken over.
Gabriela, I read that you have recently been part of Sandra Cisneros' Macondo Workshop, which is another one of those ways of reaching out and including people.
Oh, absolutely. I fit in really nicely with the Macondo community because it's what the LWC stands for. It's about helping, whether it's shelters for battered women, whether it's helping in the school system with kids that are at risk, or just being a supportive community to the gay and lesbian community. Macondo is very varied. There are Latinos, Asians, people from within the United States mostly, but also people from outside. It's heavily Latino, but they accept people from all over the country. And it's interesting because you have this branch that extends all over the United States. You know, you go to a certain city, like let's say on the East Coast, and you call up a Macondista and say, hey, I'm coming to town, can I stay over? So it's something to be definitely appreciated.
And the workshop itself takes place in San Antonio, where Sandra Cisneros is, or do they have workshops all over the country too?
Mainly in San Antonio. Right now it's kind of a little bit on chaos because Sandra has decided to leave San Antonio.
I have not heard this.
Yes, she'll be leaving in the near future, and the Macondo itself is a little bit nervous right now, trying to figure out where the next step is. But as a community, we're still together. We're still on Facebook. We're still speaking to each other. We're still planning events for the future. And we're also, you know, advertising each other's books or readings around the country.
Well, wait a minute. Where is she going?
Well, I've heard either New Mexico or San Miguel de Allende.
Wow. That's a big deal. I can't imagine her leaving that house. You know,
yeah.
She...
yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you guys have been up to lately. I know, Shaunath Karaza, you have a brand new book out.
I do, yes.
And
yes.
So I thought, you know, New Letters on the Air is a little bit about talking about things and then doing a little reading. So since you have a new book, I thought I would let you choose a poem to kick us off with today.
Well, this is from Conjuro. Conjuro was published recently by Mammoth Publications, and that is in Lawrence, Kansas. I'm going to read Linguistic Filigree. Poetry is winged through cut paper, brilliant pink and delicate, with intrinsic designs, agitated. It is silver plate linguistic filigree, flowing between synapses and synapses, illuminating my imagination. Poetry is a feeling of orange translated with surgical precision and placed on paper. It is breathing deep, space and rhythmic palpitations, lightingly excessive. It is the sound of rain on the roof of my mother's house, the smell of moistened earth and thick mist in the morning, torrent of memories kept in the heart. It is the sound of the back corner of the kitchen, of literary stews melting flavors, childhood words. Poetry is a morning walk with a flock of iridescent birds behind me and a timid spider hiding itself underfoot, its wet spider web shaking with my footsteps. Poetry is the smell of an enraged sea, his hand over my hand, yellow flight of toucans before my eyes, sacred word engraved on paper.
Linguistic Filigree from Shaunath Karaza's new book, which is called Conjuro. Tell us a little bit about this book, putting this together, because some of the poems have appeared in Primera Página as
yes.
well.
Mm-hmm. Conjuro is a bilingual collection of poetry, actually trilingual. My mother, she's from an indigenous community in Mexico. She grew up bilingual until she was 8 years old. So it's a way of honoring my mother. I don't speak Nahuatl. I wish I could, but I recognize many of the words.
Which is the native language
of
the part
Aztecs,
right?
Of the Aztecs, yes. One of our 62 languages are still alive in Mexico. Which we are very diverse, linguistically speaking. The poem, Mujer, I asked my mother to help me translate it into Nahuatl. So I have the translation here that was done by my mother, with my mother. And I had the opportunity to meet Denise Lowe at the ALTA conference, the American Literary Translators Association, last November. And she wanted to see my work. So we just started putting this together. This is a collection of poems that I've been writing for a long, long time. I moved to the U.S. in 1997, but I've been writing for a long time before that. So when I came to the U.S., I started translating my work because I mainly do my creative writing in Spanish. I always explain that if I write an article or if I write an essay, I can do that in English easily. And then I translate it into Spanish if I need to. But creatively, I write in Spanish. But I've been pushing myself to do the translation part. And I'm becoming better little by little, but still working on that. So
I think that would be hard to translate yourself.
I think translation is hard and no matter what. And literary translation is, it's an art because you recreate the work of other people. Now, when I translate my own work, I really have to detach myself and try to be as objective as possible because sometimes I start rewriting the whole thing and I come up with a different poem. But I'm in the process and I love it, yes.
Well, you mentioned Denise Lowe. She is the former Poet Laureate of Kansas and also teaches at Haskell Indian Nations University. And so she's very interested, I think, in indigenous works
yes.
from all over. So I can see why she would be interested in publishing this book, Conjuro. Well, Miguel, let's have you talk a little bit about your work and your connection with the Latino Writers Collective.
I joined the collective probably about 4 years ago. They just put out their first book, Primera Página, and I missed the deadline. I was like, oh man, you guys put out a book. I was so jealous. But then they said, hey, we're putting together another book called Cuentos del Centro, which is stories, you know, fiction. And they invited me to participate. And I had just really been a part of the group about a month. They didn't really know my level of talent, but they said, you know, we're looking for diverse people in the book and give it a shot. So I looked up on the internet, how long is a short story? You know, I did my research that way. And I wrote a short story to fit the word amount, and then I turned it in, and it turns out my story is the longest one in the book. I'm like, oh, well, I get it. This group is not so literal in what a writing group is. It is more of a community, a writing community. So that's one of the first lessons I really learned is don't come to the collective thinking you're going to get the preconceived notions of what writing is or what a writing group is. You just leave that at the door because they're real people with real hearts and real stories. And we, you know, there's academic writers and there's professional writers. But I think the heart of the collective is the community writers. So that's why I feel really comfortable in the group. And so one of the first things that I did write for the collective was a poem about being a former migrant farm worker child. And we were working with a group from KU called Harvest of Hope. They are a group of migrant kids who come to college and they learn how to navigate the world of college. And so they asked us to do a writing workshop for them. And I thought, well, I want to go. I want to do that because, you know, I want to kind of see the young farm worker children of today. I went and I thought, well, I need to write a poem about it. And so I wrote a poem and I was like, I don't know. I want to tell the truth, but I don't want to scare them off. And so when I read the poem, I mean, it kind of made people nervous a little bit at the beginning. And then there comes a line where I said something about that I hate my mother, and the room just got quiet because I was telling the truth about that situation. I didn't literally hate my mother. I hated the situation that we were in of having to be farm workers, and the nearest and most comfortable target was the person who's in charge of things, which was, you know, my mother at the time. But I made kind of a commitment that that poem was going to tell the truth of what it was to be a farm worker. And it resonated really well with the students, and that's when I found out, these are my people. This is the group that I speak to. And so actually, I took that poem, and I turned it into a short story, which was published in the Cuentos del Centro, and now I'm taking that short story and trying to expand it into a young adult novel. So I really appreciate the nurturing that the collective has given me in taking this thought and putting it in different forms, poetry, fiction.
Is there any chance you might have that poem with you?
Yeah, actually, I do have it. We're expanding our Primera Página book, and I was invited to include this in there.
Oh, fantastic.
So it's called Madre de los Campos. He wasn't good enough to look at her, but at the end of each week, she'd wear a smile that apologized for her skin. He'd talk to her in ways that tried to diminish her. He'd cheat her out of wages that we'd earned with sweat. Returning to the hot station wagon, she'd hand everyone their money and pay herself last with what was left over. Sitting next to her as she drove everyone home, I seethed. I hated her for letting him talk to her that way, and for giving our money away to those lazy cabrones who didn't work as hard, who didn't pack their lunches or even bring water. I'd cry hot, angry tears that plowed the dirt on my face, and I vowed never to be as stupid as her. When she'd drop the last person home, she'd pull out her egg and chorizo burritos that she'd made us early that morning for lunch that day. It was her lunch that she hadn't eaten. And as my sisters and I shared my mom's comida, she'd give me a smile that apologized for hurting me, but not for loving me. And I did the same.
Madre de los Campos, Mother of the Fields by Miguel Morales. And this is New Letters on the Air. That's lovely because you hate her in the poem, but you have so much compassion for her, you know.
Yeah, it's the anger at the situation. And it's written from the point of view of being a 10-year-old boy, where you're just mad at the world and you don't know who to be mad at, so it's safe to be mad at your mom.
So you're working on a young adult novel now about this story. So is the Latino Writers Collective also like a writing group where you actually bring things and read things in progress?
Yeah, you know, one of the first things we did when we came together was we actually sat around and read to each other. We read some really awful stuff to each other. that was kind of the impetus. And I think now we're kind of looking back and saying, you know, that really is one of the most important things that we do. The thing was always to celebrate the writer, but then also to promote the writer inside of you. And that has meant encouraging to publish. We set a lot of goals the first year we were together. If we've accomplished every one of them. One of them was to publish an anthology. The other one is professional development, and we've done that. We've gotten grants and sent our writers to AWP. We're making presentations at
AWP.
That's
the Associated Writing Programs
right.
Conference.
And
yeah.
We've done that every year that we've been able to. We've gotten some grants to do that. So I mean, the work has to exist in order to be able to do that. And that's one of the things that we do. We do share the work. And we've seen the story from the poem to the story, and then Miguel coming back, and I think it was at the last meeting, talking about the feedback he'd gotten in the conference in L.A. and about how he looked at that and said, well, now this is going to be a novel. So, I mean, those kinds of celebrations, that's a community. And so we enjoy that journey as much as if it were our own, because it is our own. We've seen it together. I remember the first time Miguel read that poem and he cried. And I remember we were all sitting there going, wow, I've never... You know, it's like, you know, it totally is a progression, and you have the mileposts in each one of us work that comes out of that community.
Right. You're listening right now to Jose Fauss here on New Letters on the Air. Miguel, I read that you are a Lambda Literary Fellow. So is that going to allow you to do some writing? Is it kind of like the Macondo workshop where you go someplace and you're able to focus on your writing for a while?
Yeah, that's actually where I came from, and that's where I kind of took the story that I'd written in Cuentos del Centro, and I submitted to the writer's program there, and that's what they accepted me on the premise of that story. And so I was in a young adult cohort, and I took my story and I just divided it into two chapters, and I thought, that's enough, you know. And then they got there and they said, oh, this is a really good story. We want to read the rest of it. And I said, oh, that's all I have.
And they said, better get to work.
Yeah, get to work. You need to write five chapters. And so that's what I'm doing now, is trying to just flesh it out and finish it. But it's good to have somebody who's outside of our area to say, you have a legitimate voice and your story is real. I know I can get that validation from the collective. And they have my back, and they will tell me when my writing doesn't resonate correctly. But I went to this other group, and I was really nervous and scared, and they resonated as well. And I thought, okay, if two writing groups tell me that this is a good story, then it's a good story.
You know you're on your way.
Yeah, I know I'm on my way. And Lambda Literary Foundation, that's a gay and lesbian organization. So I submitted the story, and I thought, well, it doesn't have anything to do with being gay, but I'm a gay writer writing it. And so when I got the feedback, everybody said, we really want to know this story because it is the story of a queer writer and it's the story of your life. I thought, yeah, it doesn't have to be overtly sexual to resonate in that community. So that was kind of a lesson to me as well.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
It was a great experience. And so now, you know, this group of writers across the nation, they're aware of the Latino Writers Collective. And so they're another writers community who's kind of, like Macondo, has ties to the collective. And everybody brings that experience and their personal experience of development, professional development. It kind of comes back to the collective. And so we introduce ourselves and other organizations to the collective. I think that's an important part as well, not just to bring new writers here and grow our own literary circle, but to let other professional organizations know that we are here in the Midwest in the United States. And they really are open to that. They'd never really thought about Latinos in the middle of the country.
In the heartland.
In the heartland.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm really excited about that.
Well, Gabriela, you're the daughter of migrant workers. So you and Miguel have experiences that are linked, but you were the daughter. They were migrant workers from...
My father was born in South Texas, actually, a couple miles from where I was born and raised also. And my mother was from Mexico.
And they would travel around to the different farms?
Mainly California. Okay. And I heard about Michigan and some of the northern states. I myself have never actually worked in a field. They never wanted me to.
Right, because they had that experience themselves. They didn't want that for their children. Do you have a particular work that you might want to read that was influenced by being part of the group?
Well, I have a poem entitled Kansas, and I wrote it soon after I discovered the group of the five that actually were the founders of the collective. And I was thrilled to find the group of even these five people because I felt so alone in the middle of the Midwest.
Where did you first move to in Kansas?
We first moved to Overland Park. And I swear I was the only Latina within 20 miles perimeter from where I lived.
That would be tough.
Yeah, and then tougher even, I moved to Ottawa soon after.
Oh, wow.
Ottawa, Kansas.
Which is a very small town for people who don't know. At least when you're in Overland Park, it's almost a suburb of Kansas City. Well, let's hear that poem.
I was going to read Kansas, but I'll go ahead and read Buñuelos since it mentions Ottawa, Kansas. If you don't know buñuelos, they're like those crispy tostadas that they sell at Taco Bell. We usually traditionally make them around the Christmas season. They're basically fried flour tortillas, sprinkled with a mix of cinnamon and canela, cinnamon sugar and plain sugar, white sugar. Buñuelos. Here I stand in La Cocina, trying to recapture those times when during New Year's Eve, Mama used to make me buñuelos. Here I stand in a white man's kitchen, neighborhood, town, state, and country, 1,000 miles from my South Texas, far from El Barrio, where the neighbors congregate to bid El Año farewell. Conjunto music blaring, accordion, guitars, and guapangos. Kids shooting off illegal fireworks, running to hide behind the car tires when the police drove by. Run, run, La Chota is coming. I don't know what gave us more of a rush, hiding from the police or watching the bottle rockets near miss the neighbor's rooftop. Far from El Barrio, where everyone starts celebrating temprano, bailes en el Villarreal and el Centro Cívico. Daddy firing his .32 revolver at midnight. I remember eating leftover tamales and capirutada with lots of peanuts and queso amarillo. No, I'm instead frying lopsided and chewy buñuelos in Ottawa, Kansas. Wondering why I didn't pay more attention. Wondering why I can't remember her recipe.
Buñuelos. And that was Gabriela Lemons reading from the collection Primera Página, Poetry from the Latino Heartland. You're listening to New Letters on the Air. I'm Angela Elam. Well, you know what? I think I've got to hear Kansas, too.
It's really short.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and read Kansas, but this is definitely dedicated to the collective. They inspired this poem. Kansas. I know when the harvest's winter wheat, when corn is to be planted and how close to God people think they are. But I don't know one multi-tongue Latino where I can buy pumpkin empanadas, dulce de leche, and de la rosa mazapan, where the La Llorona roams in black or white in these parts and what creeks she frequents. I cannot remember how a wetback smells anymore soon after he crosses El Rio Grande, the vein of my roots meandering in hues of azul.
Kansas. Tell you what, Gabriela Lemons, you better eat before you listen to her. You're going to get hungry. And Gabriela, I just have one last question for you since you're president of the Latino Writers Collective right now. What's ahead for you guys?
Well, a lot of readings. We have a very busy schedule. We must have about 12 commitments between now and the end of the year. What's next is basically what Joe mentioned, that we have been so busy with bringing readers from the outside, which is very crucial to the community and as a collective. It's one of our main goals. But we want to expand the talent of our own collective members. And we're getting together once a month and we're sharing our work. I definitely invite the community to come out to our readings, to come out to our workshops. It's important to get our voices out to the community and to show others in the community that there are people like them around that are writers and are willing to share their work and their experiences.
One other thing that we are concentrating on, too, is children. We're trying to get into the schools, and we're talking to some of the schools, some of the writing teachers and English teachers to come in and start presenting. And we have some commitments already that we're going to start following up at hopefully Ward, Alta Vista, Cristo Rey. We have a lot of places we can go and be very effective.
And I know the group is very active with the literacy program here in Kansas
right.
City.
Yeah, we recently had a quarterly board meeting of the Latino Writers Collective Board, and we decided that we needed to prioritize some of our goals, and we decided that education was the first priority, workshops were the second priority, and our readings are always a priority, so that's our third priority. So we are trying to get more work into schools, build more partnerships, coalitions, formalize some of the work that we do just on our own, you know, as people call us and say, hey, can you come talk to our students? well, let's codify some of those, you know, relationships and build those into grants. So that way it's beneficial not only for us, but for the partner agency that we're working with. So that we were giving ourselves a little more clout in the area. We're building up our programs. And it's really good for the members of this collective to go out to schools. You see somebody on stage who's brown, they automatically become a mentor. And so it's nice to be able to kind of give back to the community that way. The collective has given us so much. It's nice for us to be able to give back.
Comes back to that whole idea of community and sharing. Well, Jose, would you like to take us out with a poem?
Sure.
Well,
this is it's not in the anthology, but it's one that, you know, hanging around with the collective, we kind of realize we all use Spanish or throw it in even then if some of us speak it or not. And I think once we were talking about how different the different aspects of our collective is, we have people from Costa Rica, Guatemala, Salvador, Ecuador, Mexico, every place, Colombia, Peru, and Dominican Republic. And so it just made me thinking about my family, and I call this Retrato de Familia, and it's based on a photo that I found that my mother gave me a few years back, and I just happened to be finding it when I was moving. And I was looking at the picture, and I think it explains it pretty much. Retrato de Familia. Mi familia stands facing the camera, from mi abuela to mi prima Leonor, and tío Guillermo to mi tía Emerita, framing the line that hugs close to the wall. Us kids are entwined and woven into the legs, elbows, and waist of assorted other tías and tíos. We are of varying shades of and tints, pink-flushed cheeks next to olive-brown arms, questioning ebony eyes beneath jet-black curls, deep brown folds embracing plump peach cheeks. A bashful white face beneath golden braids grins at my primos Rafael's twisted face as he succeeds in spoiling the decorum of the family portrait. Then the stern look of mi abuelita as she eyes the children that at any moment threaten to spill across the polished floor like a stew about to overflow the boiling pot, as if with one look she can hold us back in the container, in the very pan that has stirred our different flavors, into this mix of savory, Creole, mestizo, Moor, from the sands of Arabia and the broad stretch of Africa, and the spreading tubers of Andalus and Catalonia, and the indigenous migrants from the north, and the bridge to the ancestral lands, to the mother, to the patria, to the folds of the Rift Valley. We simmer, and the bubbles subside for an instant until the hand with the camera gives a thumbs up. And then this stew spills across the floor, to the door, to the streets, to the city, to the hills, to the sea, to the discomfort of those who fail to see the varying tones and tints of our rapidly growing family.
A Snapshot of My Family by Jose Faust, a founding member of the Latino Writers Collective. He was joined by Gabriela Lemons, Miguel Morales, and Shaunith Carraza, whose works you can find in the two books Primera Página and Cuentos del Centro, Poetry and Stories from the Latino Heartland. Visit our website to find links to those books and Shaunith Carraza's Conjuro, as well as to the Latino Writers Collective and the Writer's Place. That's newletters.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at New Letters Radio. New Letters on the Air is produced by New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, with partial support from the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. This show was originally produced in 2012 with help from Stephanie Hughes, Jess Williams, and Christian Lilliequist. Thanks also to Jamie Walsh and to you for listening to New Letters on the Air. I'm Angela Elam.